News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, good morning to you.
Lots to talk about.
I know you're here first and foremost to talk about the Global Ireland Initiative. We'll get to that in a moment, but I'm just kind of curious. Loads of texts coming through, Taoiseach, in relation to that issue about religious symbols being removed from hospitals and the suggestion that should happen. Do you have a view on that?
I suppose one of those cases where paper never refuses ink. This follows on from a report, not a government report, an independent report, which Minister Harris commissioned into the role of voluntary organisations and religious bodies in healthcare. And that really arose from the whole issue around the National Maternity Hospital and, you know, who would own it and what role the religious would have and so on. And in that report, which we published quite soon, it was chaired by Catherine Day. Remember that the woman who was head of the European Commission Civil Service, very M group
serious
people.
Serious operator,
If I recall correctly, somewhere in the report it says that, you know, charities and religious bodies that run hospitals and so on, you know, should have regard to the fact that in modern Ireland there's now a diversity of views on religion and so on. So it's not a campaign from the government or anyone to go around removing cribs or crucifixes or statues of Our Lady. No, that's not what's going to happen. But it is a message to charities and voluntary bodies that do run hospitals and schools, you know, just to have regard to these things. It is the 21st century. Things have changed. You know, a lot of patients, a lot of kids aren't religious, maybe aren't Roman Catholic, and the ethos of an institution that's publicly funded should reflect the public, not just anyone's
It's a tricky one, though, isn't it, Taoiseach? I mean, people texting him and saying, you know, the crib being removed from certain hospitals at Christmas, I mean, that seems a little over the top, doesn't it?
I think it's totally over the top, quite frankly, unless it's done for health and safety reasons or something like that. I've a different view of these things. I actually believe in the separation of church and state. I think that's right. But what I don't believe in is banishing religion to some sort of private space. And there are a lot of kind of aggressive secularists, as I call them, particularly on the left, who think that religion should be something that's almost banned from the public space. The way I'd have it is I'd have a crib and I'd have a menorah up for Hanukkah and maybe something for Eid as well, and maybe recognise and celebrate everyone's traditions in a reasonable way. Not
common sense, basically, is what you're saying.
A lot of schools do that now, you know, including a lot of Catholic parish schools. You know, would recognise the fact that the kids in schools now are very diverse and that there are other holidays and other religions.
Yeah,
and,
makes sense.
I think that's the way to go.
One other story I just wanted in the paper today, I just want to ask you about as well, is the, and you were commenting, it's a story based on what you had to say yesterday in the Dáil about the National Broadband Plan. The Times Ireland edition today saying it's in doubt. You said in the Dáil the project could cost many multiples of the first estimate. Are we almost getting to the point now with the National Broadband Plan that we actually need to reconsider the whole thing? Because there's this, A, the cost, and B, the possibility that technology could actually render this plan redundant, and the technology might actually be there to do it a lot more cheaply, a lot more efficiently.
Well, I think before we sign on the dotted line and before we commit a very large amount of public money over the next 30 years, this project, we'll have to consider all of those things, the cost, the deliverability and potential alternatives. And that's what we're doing at the moment, actually. We hope to make a decision, or at least recommend a decision, to the Oireachtas and to the government by Easter. I should say we are actually making a lot of progress in broadband. When the current government, made up of Fine Gael and Independents, took up office about 3 years ago, only about half of the premises in Ireland, you know, it's homes, farms, businesses, had access to high-speed broadband. Working government and private sector together, that's up around 80% now. And the Paris Minister Nocton and Mr. Bruton now, a huge amount of progress has been made. But that still leaves about 500,000 homes, farms, businesses, mainly in rural Ireland, and also in some parts of urban Ireland, that don't have access to high-speed broadband. And I think that's a real problem, because when I think about the future, when I think about what the country's going to look like in 20 years' time, or even 10 years' time, it's going to be home working. You know, people working for multinationals, you know, like Microsoft or Google and Apple, but not in their headquarters, you know, in Clane, in Butvant. Apple do a lot of this already, in fact, but that's really going to explode in the next couple of years. We're talking about an Ireland in which there's a post office in every home. You know, through your home assistants or through your iPad, you could do everything that you do in the post office at home.
Obviously, even, you need good quality broadband to do that.
And even things like education and healthcare, you know, the public health nurse checking in with you, you know, using technology. If kids, you know, miss a school day, being able to actually watch what's going on in the classroom. And,
and
if we don't extend broadband to everyone
in the country. People listening this morning saying that we're a million miles away from that. We're practically just faster than dial-up at the moment.
Yeah, and my view is that if we don't make broadband available to all parts of the country, or certainly 95%, which is what the contract says, with fibre to the home, and that's the best technology to do it, then we're going to leave hundreds of thousands of people behind, and it would be almost like not doing rural electrification. So I'm a big supporter of this, but we do need to get it right.
I read from your comments yesterday, or maybe I overinterpreted them. I got the feeling from your comments yesterday that you're thinking it might be time to look at Plan B here.
Well, we actually have looked at plans B, C and D, and that work is not complete yet. I think you mentioned technology. Say, for example, Imagine made a very significant announcement a week or two ago about rural broadband, and they'll be able to provide broadband to a lot of these premises, but it won't be fibre. And fibre is, we believe, the best technology. That's what this program does. That the private sector just won't be able to do because it's not
the 5G doesn't do, for example, as well. And you say
certainly not yet. And you know, the best advice that we have is that there's no technology that's better than fibre to the home.
Okay,
now that may change.
But what if it costs 2 or 3 billion euros to do so? To do this plan.
Well, that's something we're going to have to consider. It is going to be expensive. I can't give you the figure because we haven't appointed a preferred bidder yet, but it is going to be expensive. For the last 10 years, believe it or not, we've been delivering infrastructure on time, on budget, everything from Cross City Lewis to the Gortune motorway, to the schools programme, to all of the primary care centres being built
not
around the country.
Not the National Children's Hospital,
And I'm coming to that. Yeah. And you know, under a different party, it was the norm that infrastructure projects ran late and over budget. We changed that, and then along came the Children's Hospital, and we have to learn from the mistakes that were made there, and I take responsibility for those mistakes as head of government. So before we sign the dotted line on this very expensive project, we need to make sure that we're making the right decision. There are two big differences between the National Broadband Programme and the National Children's Hospital. First of all, we haven't signed any contracts yet, so we haven't made any huge financial commitment. But also secondly, because of the public-private partnership, it actually the cost will be spread over 30 years. And the users will, of course, make a contribution to the cost. So it is quite a different project to the National Children's Hospital.
When can people expect a decision on this, Taoiseach?
I would like to make it by now. I'd certainly like to have it made by Easter. I know everyone says that the government blames everything on Brexit, but one thing we do have to take into account is Brexit. If we're in a no-deal scenario in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be looking to find hundreds of millions of euros to bail out the beef industry, to save jobs in agri-food, to save jobs in small exporters around the country. That'll be where we're looking. That'll be the money we're looking for, rather than money for additional infrastructure. And so that's a factor too. But my objective is that we were able to make a recommendation by Easter, which I suppose is less than 2 months away now.
Okay.
And then have the shovels in the ground this year if we press the go.
Okay. I wasn't going to ask you about the National Children's Hospital till a little bit later, but you did bring it up. Just that we were talking to your health minister Simon Harris last week on this. Just have a listen to what he had to say in relation to the National Children's Hospital.
Of course, as you go along the way of delivering such a major project, the things you say, I wish we could have done this, I wish we could have done that. But I know, you know, you hear the word scandal bandied around a lot in media and politics today. The only scandal in relation to this would have been a decision to cancel the project.
Now, a lot of people will listen to that and say, and I put it to Simon Harris at times, say that's pretty extraordinary. It's like there is something scandalous about a 300 or 400 million euro overspend. I'm ignoring the initial valuation because that was never realistic. But the way the cost has escalated in the last year or so, that's pretty scandalous, isn't it?
It's scandalous that the government, or rather the government's agents, got the estimate of the cost of this project so wrong.
Mistakes were made, quite clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. like I say, it is something we've seen before in the past. You know, the DART, the original Lewis, the Port Tunnel, all of those things, long before my party was in office. And we were very critical of that at the time. And we can't take credit for getting things right, for balancing the books and full employment and delivering a capital program on time if we don't also take responsibility for this. And our agent certainly made some big mistakes in calculating what this project was going to cost. However, it is important to say that this isn't taxpayers' money wasted. The money isn't even spent yet, in fact, but it will be spent.
It will be spent. And will be wasted, arguably.
And nobody is realistically coming forward saying that they can complete this project cheaper or quicker than the current plans. I know there are people arguing over where it should be located, but that decision was made in 2012 and is not reversible.
And not the reason for this cost overrun, I think.
It's part of the reason.
It's
an element of it. And there was no doubt back in 2012 that a greenfield site would have been cheaper to build on and quicker. But a decision was made then that the best thing for Ireland's children was to co-locate it at the biggest adult teaching hospital in the state and to co-locate a maternity with it. And we knew at the time that it would cost more and take longer. We didn't know how much longer it would take or how much more it would cost. But there's one thing I'm absolutely sure of, and we should never forget this. We shouldn't ever forget the value of this project. You know, this is going to be, this is going to transform paediatric healthcare in Ireland. You know, it's single rooms for every kid, room for every parent to stay overnight. It's 5 MRI machines. You know, this is the kind of hospitals I only see in America.
Yeah.
You know, 5
MRI machines, these things 22 don't come theaters. Cheap. They don't come
no,
cheap.
No, and I often hear people talking about, you know, the cost per bed as if that's the way hospitals work now. It's not about the number of beds. It's about the MRI machines. It's about the theatres. It's about the research facilities. It's about the clinical trials. It's about, you know, so much more.
Very important point to make, but at the same time, when this is commissioned
in 2023, nobody will be sorry that we made this investment. I think it's a little bit like the new terminal at Dublin Airport. It's going to be a bad news story until the day it opens, and everyone after that will wonder why we didn't build it quicker.
And that is a fair point, but at the same time, we can't write a blank check for it.
I haven't.
And I know you're not suggesting that. You did say mistakes made among your agents. Mistakes made among senior public servants, among within your own cabinet as well?
Perhaps. I don't think that if we'd been, you know, monitoring it more closely and having meetings about every week or two, that somehow would have made it cheaper to build. I don't honestly believe that. Perhaps in terms of the communications of it and the timing and making the public and media aware sooner. I think there's lots of things that could have been done better. Would it have reduced the cost in any way? No, I don't think so.
Just finally on this, were you irritated yourself that you weren't made aware of this until November? Was that a source of irritation to you?
It was disbelief. I wasn't entirely surprised that the project was going to cost more than we thought. But I really couldn't believe that it was 400 and something million more than we thought it would. And then the first thing was to say, you know, no, get lost, you know, go back to the contractors, tell them we're not paying, negotiate this down. And in fairness, that's the approach that was taken by the department. As I think I said before, and I do mean this, you know, had I been told earlier and had the Minister of Finance been told earlier, we would have asked Minister Harris to do exactly what he did, which was to go back, do due diligence, negotiate with the contractors, get this amount down. And you'll know that one of the contractors, the main contractor, looked for an extra 200 million and the Department of Health and the Minister and his agents managed to negotiate that extra 200 million down to 60. So we'll keep working on this in terms of trying to contain the cost. But one thing we won't do is repeat another mistake from the past, which is to reduce the spec or quality of what's being provided there.
Okay.
And that actually did happen with big hospital projects in the past. You know, Tala wasn't straightforward, Beaumont wasn't straightforward either. And as those projects developed, in some cases, you know, the spec was reduced, they were downgraded a bit in order to save money, and then we spent the next 30 years adding extra wings and upgrading them, and that's not going to happen this time. This hospital is going to be used not just by kids born this year, but the grandkids of kids born this year, and we need to think of it that way.
Okay, let's talk about the government's international development policy that you are launching today, part of the Global Ireland Initiative. What exactly is happening today?
Yeah, so today we're launching our new policy on international development. My strong belief and the government's vision is that Ireland should be an island that's at the centre of the world, a country that's a good global citizen, that's open to trade, open to investment, a committed member of the European Union, a committed member of the United Nations, and everything we do has to speak to that overall vision. And this is part of it. We also have, of course, what we're doing around peacekeeping. We have what we're doing around expanding our embassies, 10 new embassies and consulates this year, including places like LA and Mumbai, for example, for the first time. But what we're launching today is our international development policy. And at the moment, we spend about $800 million a year in international development. We intend to meet the 0.7% target. Some countries have done that.
Do you? Because we've been talking about this for, what, 15 years or something?
We have. And you know, before the crash, we almost got there. We were over 0.5. Because of the crash, it went down to about 0.3. And now that we can afford it as a country, provided Brexit doesn't blow us off course or something calamitous doesn't happen to our economy, we think we can get there by 2030. But it has to make sure, we have to make sure that's not just about spending money. Your listeners will have no doubts about the ability of governments to spend money. What they want to know is what's the money going to be spent on and what will the outcomes be. We're, what this policy is all about is how we're going to focus our international development and aid programs over the next 10 years. And there's going to be a real focus on things that we believe will make the biggest difference. Things like gender equality in developing countries. We know that when you empower women and educate women, that that transforms societies. So we want to be part of that. We want to be the island that helped to educate a million girls across Africa. We want to help with climate action. We know that climate change is going to impact very severely on developing countries, thus causing big movements in terms of migration. We haven't seen the start of it yet if we've mass migration because of climate change, so really want to invest in that. Also in governance, you can't do anything unless institutions in a country work, the courts, the police, the government departments and institutions want to do a lot around that, as well as traditional, you know, relief when there's a crisis. So that's what the policy is all about. I know for some people, they may not be interested in this or don't believe it's a priority, but I think there are a lot of people in the country who actually believe in this kind of work. A lot of NGOs who do enormous work in this area, a lot of missionaries in the past. And I think a lot of people, even from a self-interest point of view, will understand that many of the problems that we face in Ireland, whether it's security threats, whether it's drugs, whether it's migration, whether it's climate change, that these are global problems and actually we can only deal with them.
And we need to play a role in helping to solve those.
Yeah, and we are. And not just a role, we want to be one of the leading small countries when it comes to international development, when it comes to peacekeeping, when it comes to engagement in international institutions.
Okay, it's a very laudable aim and I think most of our listeners this morning would agree with that. Can I bring you back to matters political and matters at home? Let's talk about confidence and supply. Very interesting piece by Stephen Collins in the Irish Times this morning. You may not have a chance to read it, but effectively,
not yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's saying, look, and Stephen, you know, very moderate, reasoned commentator. He's basically saying, look, the doll is out. Current doll is outlived its usefulness. He's saying basically he's highlighting the fact so many private members' bill are being tabled in the doll. Very few of them ever become legislation. He's saying, look, it's time to have a general election once Brexit is sorted. Do you agree with that? Once Brexit is sorted, is it time for a general election to I suppose, clear the air and get a bit of certainty back into politics?
Well, I think I think it was about this time 3 years ago that we had the last general election. It may even have been this weekend, 3 years ago. And I think very few people, including me, thought that the government would last this long.
Yeah.
You know, very much a minority government. Fine Gael, independents who hadn't been in government before. And a minority, and it actually has lasted much longer than people
undoubtedly
thought.
Is it working now?
Notwithstanding the problems that we have, I think we've done some.
Has it gone past its sell-by date, though? No. Stephen seems to think it has.
No, I don't think so. Notwithstanding the fact that we're a minority, we've done some really big things. You know, everything from repealing the Eighth Amendment, giving people the right to make that decision, delivering full employment, then also obviously dealing with Brexit, which is still outstanding. The assumption I suppose he's making, in fairness to him, I haven't read the article yet, is that if we had an election once the withdrawal agreement is ratified, that election would necessarily be decisive. And I always take opinion polls with a pinch of salt, but I don't ignore them. Politicians pretend they do. I tend to take them in threes. And I'm not sure we would actually form a government that's very different to the one we have now. So, you know, we all need to be realistic about that. And also bear in mind that if we do secure a withdrawal agreement and get that ratified, and I think we can and we will, that doesn't mean that Brexit goes away. It means that we have a transition period for about 2 years, during which nothing really changes. But it does mean that the United Kingdom will be out of the EU, and we have to then get involved in negotiations on the future relationship. And that is going to be difficult too, because that's going to be all about the trading relationship. With the backstop, we can guarantee that there'll be no hard border.
That could go on for 2 years.
Well, presumably,
the deal isn't going to last another 2 years. That
well, it can't, yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, technically it can under the Constitution, yeah. But I don't think I'll pull that trick. But
are you
technically
saying,
can go for seven.
Are you effectively saying no election for this year, basically, the rest of the year, all things being equal, basically, that's your preference?
It's not necessarily my call for a start. And
well, you have a big say in it.
Well, you know what I proposed. What I proposed a couple of months ago was that that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael should agree that there be no election until the summer of 2020,
yeah,
and that we should agree a policy programme of things that could be delivered between now and then.
You got some of that from Fianna Fáil.
Well, not really. They actually rejected both of those things.
Well, they're propping you up for another year, if you should.
What they said is that, you know, because they would bring us... They'd give a certainty around Brexit, which I think is important and is valuable, and I acknowledge that they're doing the right thing by the country in that. And they've talked about us trying to negotiate
budget. What's your preference, Taoiseach? Keep going into next year, basically.
My preference is to keep going and to focus on the job and getting the people's work done. We've a lot of challenges in which we haven't even touched on yet, in housing, for example.
Yeah,
and
I do want to get to that.
And on Brexit, on the economy, on making sure that we put money back in people's pockets. And I want to be focused on the job of getting things done for the people
fair
who pay
point.
My salary.
Okay, fair point. And let's
not
do,
on elections,
let's do that.
But whenever they come, they come.
Okay, and just before we do move on to that, reshuffle, is it still your intention to reshuffle the cabinet after the European and local elections?
I haven't made a final decision on that.
You were pretty clear at Christmas you would do it.
I think what I said at Christmas was that the logical time to do it was was after local and European elections, but that's going to depend on other factors, including, for example, where we are with Brexit. We could be in an extension period to June or July, and I don't think reshuffling a cabinet at a time of uncertainty would make sense. But one thing I would say, and I had a meeting last night with all the Fine Gael backbench TDs, you know, those, some of whom are foreign ministers, many of whom have never been ministers. I'm very fortunate to be leader of a party that has real talent on the bench. I think I could probably appoint a new cabinet of all new ministers, if I had to. And we've so much talent and so much depth on the Fine Gael benches.
So it's your intention to give new talent a run at some stage?
At the right point, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But I haven't put a date on it.
That would suggest there will be some demotions from your cabinet, but I know you're not going to tell us who those demotions will be. You quite rightly said about focusing on the issues that affect people out there. Housing, traffic. We seem to have a problem with infrastructure in this country. I'm thinking, for example, of the Metro line and the difficulties that has encountered, a project that most people would favour. Housing, I mean, one of your own ministers, Finney McGrath, said a couple of weeks ago there shouldn't be any more than four stories in his constituency. Why do we find it so difficult to deliver on infrastructure projects in this country?
Yeah, well, we do deliver on them.
Slowly at times.
Lewis Cross City is done, for example. Yeah. We're making huge progress on the Atlantic Economic Corridor. Gortum is done, just turned the sod on. The N4 up to Sligo during the week. At long last, the new runway which we need at Dublin Airport is under construction. And again, at long last, the ill-fated but much-needed National Children's Hospital, after decades of not being delivered, is now being delivered, and the first element of that will open in Blanchardstown this year. And everyone can see all the new schools being built all over the country, the primary care centres, the huge investment in sporting facilities.
But we're struggling to build enough. There is progress being made, I grant you that, but we're struggling to build enough houses. We're struggling. I mean, Bus Connects looks to me like a fantastic plan, but look at the opposition it's run into. Again, one of your own ministers, Catherine Byrne, saying the public consultation process is a dictatorship. I mean, you have politicians who seem to be putting electoral gain ahead of what's best for the country.
Well, you know, we are a democracy. And
not a dictatorship.
We're not a dictatorship, and we are a democracy, and that does mean that individuals have rights and they have to be balanced with the common good. And there are local concerns, and they have to be taken into account as well when it comes to taking into account the wider national good. When it comes to the transport projects, and I'm a former transport minister and have a huge interest in this area, you know, in fairness to the government agencies, Transport Infrastructure Ireland and the National Transport Authority, these public consultations are genuine. They are going to listen to people. There will be changes to the route and plans for Metro. There will be changes to the route and plans for Bus Connects, not just in Dublin. Bus Connects isn't just a Dublin thing. It's going to be in
the worry is it'll be diluted to the point where it actually reduces its effectiveness. That's the concern people have, that local politicians will render it redundant.
I will do anything that I can to make sure that isn't the case. You know, I understand that Bus Connects is controversial, that it will impact on people's properties. But I live in a commuter constituency, have all my life. There are lots of people in my constituency who spend 2 hours on the bus every day, and it's getting worse.
You were caught in traffic yourself.
Yeah, I was. Regularly am. Yeah. Even though I can use the bus lanes, I rarely do. There are lots of people in my constituency who spend maybe 10 hours a week on the bus. And with Bus Connects, we could reduce those journey times by half. So that's an extra 5 hours a week to spend with your family, to get outdoors, do an evening course. You know, it's time is so precious now, and you know, we need to do these projects.
Is it helpful when someone like Catherine Byrne says the public consultation process for Bus Connects is a dictatorship?
Well, I don't agree with her. I respect Catherine, work well with her, and she's doing a great job in the Department of Health, particularly around public health issues and addiction. But isn't a dictatorship. You know, we've already seen, for example, how the state agencies have listened to the concerns of Na Fianna, for example. We've heard how they have listened to the concerns of people in Ranelagh. So I would ask people to engage with this public consultation. The projects will be delivered, but changes will be made to take into account the genuine concerns that local communities have.
Okay, Taoiseach, I should ask you about Brexit, because it is a huge issue, and it's an issue that will have potentially a huge effect on people's lives. We were talking to one of your ministers, Regina Doherty, yesterday on Brexit. She made a very good point about the extension. She said, yeah, of course we'd accept an extension. It certainly beats a hard Brexit. I'm just wondering, though, a short 3 month extension, does that actually solve anything, or does it just kick the can a little bit down the road? Would something like an 18 month extension, allowing time to negotiate a proper trade agreement that would maybe render the backstop, would neuter the backstop as an issue, is that something that might be a better outcome at this stage?
Well, I think an extension would always be better than no deal.
Yeah.
But a deal will be better than extension. So we're working towards...
You'd prefer the withdrawal agreement to be voted on by the House of Commons than a long-term extension?
Yes. You know, I think there's been so much uncertainty around Brexit for the past 2 years. It's causing uncertainty for a lot of people in Northern Ireland, cross-border workers as well. It's delaying investments. It's delaying important decisions. And what I would like to see is the withdrawal agreement ratified by the House of Commons and the European Parliament, and then an orderly Brexit happening and allowing us to then negotiate the future relationship. Obviously, my preferred outcome would be for the United Kingdom to change its mind and remain, but I'm realistic to know that that's not.
You're not holding out hope for a second referendum or anything like that?
You know, that's not my business.
Yeah.
And I know how sensitive some British politicians and the British media can be. So there's nothing they would like more than for me to call for a second referendum so they can then jump all over that.
Are you amused?
So I'm not going to walk into that one.
Are you amused by how you've become sort of a bête noire for the elements of the British media and elements of the Conservative Party?
Well, it is elements of the media, not all
is
of
it the Prime Minister?
And elements of the Conservative Party. No, definitely not. No, definitely not. We have a very good understanding, in fact. And there's lots more we can do together once we get beyond Brexit, particularly in relation to the North. But in terms of being a bit of a bogeyman, I'm not surprised at all. There are elements and parts of the British establishment that don't like an Irish government or an Irish Taoiseach standing up for Ireland, that they don't understand why we're not leaving too. They don't understand why we won't, to use their language, fall in line. They don't understand why we're not helping them out rather than being committed to the European Union. And, you know,
you're making no apologies for that, basically.
Absolutely not. You know, we made a decision as a country 100 years ago to be independent, and we made a decision in recent decades to join the European Union, and we made a very, very big decision, although maybe we didn't realise it at the time, when we voted for the Maastricht Treaty, that we were going to join the Eurozone without the United Kingdom. So we made the decision that our place is at the heart of the European Union, which we helped to build. And that means we're going to travel a different road to the United Kingdom, but I think it's going to be a better road.
Okay. Just before we let you go, Taoiseach, you and I both celebrated big birthdays recently. Mm. Unfortunately, my
53, apparently.
Yeah.
In my case, anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh, yeah, good touche. I was going to say, my big birthday was a fair bit bigger than yours. You've said before, you spoke before, and I know you kind of rode back on it a little bit about getting out of politics by the time you're 50 or 51. Is that still the intention? Or I suppose maybe being Taoiseach as quickly as you became maybe changed things. But where do you see yourself by the next big birthday?
And when I said that, I got a slap on the wrist from my press advisor, and I was told never to say that again, because if you ever suggest that you're ever going to leave politics,
once you're going, you're gone.
people interpret it as a lack of commitment to politics, and I can assure you there's nothing I'm more committed to than this job. It's an enormous privilege, and I give it 16, 18 hours a day, 6.5 days a week, and I'm really grateful to have the privilege to hold this position. And my objective is to do as much good work as I can while I have the opportunity. But I know it won't last forever, and that won't be my decision, unfortunately. That'll be the public's at some point, I'm sure.
Okay. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, thanks indeed for coming
into
us this morning.
Stay with us after the break. All your sport, including Liverpool's rediscovery of their mojo.